Journalist Adam Hochschild says Benjamin Skinner reminds him of the British abolitionist of 200 years ago, Zachary Macaulay, who once traveled on a slave ship across the Atlantic, taking notes. Hochschild is the author of a history of the heroes of the British anti-slavery movement, called Bury the Chains. He told Steve Paulson there are lessons to be learned and hope to be found in the story of the movement created by the very first abolitionists.
It was the first time that a large number of people in one country became outraged and stayed outraged for many years over the plight of people of another color in another part of the world.
Well, and partly what makes the story so remarkable is that slavery was just commonplace. I mean, I'm guessing that back in the 18th century in England, no one would have guessed that it could ever be abolished. It was part of the fabric of daily life.
I know. I mean, ending slavery in the British Empire was as improbable a place for an anti-slavery movement to take birth as it would be today for a renewable energy movement to be born in Saudi Arabia. There were simply too many people making too much money off this trade. Britain dominated the Atlantic slave trade. Roughly half the slaves that crossed the Atlantic, traveling not just to British colonies, but to the American South, to other people's colonies, traveled in British ships, 40,000 slaves a year. So there was a whole shipping industry that felt it had a deeply vested interest in this trade.
Well, tell me the story. When this started out, my impression was there were a few activists who got together. I mean, they all hated slavery. And they set out to do something about it. They set out to abolish slavery. How did that happen?
Well, in 1785, the head of Cambridge University made the morality of slavery the topic of the annual Cambridge University Latin Essay Contest. Winning one of these Latin contests at Oxford or Cambridge was a huge thing. People remembered it for the rest of your life. One of the people who entered his contest was a 25-year-old divinity student named Thomas Clarkson, who had no interest in slavery. He just wanted to win this big Latin prize. So he entered the contest. He was a very diligent researcher. He read everything he could find about slavery, interviewed people. Clarkson was absolutely bowled over with horror by what he learned about slavery. Wrote his essay, won the prize, got on his horse and headed for London to make his way in the world. Halfway to London, he found himself thinking not about the pleasure of having won this Latin prize, not about the promising career that awaited him, but about slavery. Got off his horse, sat down by the side of the road, and writes about this very movingly, about how he sat there thinking, and finally the thought came into his mind that someone should do something about this. He got back on his horse and spent the remaining 61 years of his life totally devoted to the cause of ending slavery, first in the British Empire and then in the rest of the world.
Mm. You make the case that he was, for all practical purposes, one of the first great investigative reporters.
In the summer of 1787, Thomas Clarkson went on the road by horseback for about 5 months, making an organizing and investigative trip. He went first, for example, took him 3 days by horseback from London to the port of Bristol, which was one of the major British slave ports. And he wanted to see how sailors were dragooned onto these slave ships, where life, by the way, was horrible for sailors. So what he did was he hung out in the waterfront pubs in Bristol and watched how sailors were dragooned into these jobs. The pub keepers explained how, you know, they would let the sailors run up debts and so forth at the pubs, and they'd get deep in debt, be threatened with prison, and then, well, the only way out would be if you sign on with my friend Captain So-and-so, who's about to set off on a slaving voyage in Africa, then I'll cancel your debts. Mm. So he wrote down things like that. He was a natural investigative reporter. He moved on to the port of Liverpool, where, incidentally, a group of slave ship captains, seeing what he was up to, tried to kill him. In Liverpool, he walked past the window of a ship chandler's shop, a shop that sold supplies to these slave ships, saw some items in the window, handcuffs, leg shackles, thumb screws, an instrument of torture, and another peculiar-looking iron instrument. He didn't know what it was. He asked the shopkeeper, and the shopkeeper said, oh, that's for when your slaves on shipboard are trying to commit suicide by not eating. This is what you use to pry their mouths open.
Oh, my God.
And he said, Give me one of each. He put them in his saddlebags, and then from then on, as he traveled around the country, whenever he would arrive in a new town, he would go to the local newspaper, take these things out, put them on the editor's desk, and say, look what our British sailors are doing.
Part of what makes this story interesting is the anti-slavery movement really enlisted all kinds of methods to get the word out, to try to convert people. I mean, getting stories in newspapers, designing political posters, organizing consumer boycotts. I mean, really, the strategies that activists today use.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been involved in activist causes during my lifetime, and I'm sure many of your listeners have. Every major tool that we use was invented, it seems to me, during about this five-year period from 1787, when this movement began, to 5 years later, 1792. The first logo ever specifically designed for a political cause, a kneeling slave in chains surrounded by the legend, "Am I not a man and a brother?" And this was reproduced on hat pins and coat buttons and cufflinks and as lapel buttons. It was the ancestor of the buttons that we wear for a political cause today. And they invented other tools we used, like the consumer boycott. In 1792, more than 300,000 people in England were refusing to eat sugar, the principal product grown by slaves. Another thing that they did, which we take completely for granted today, but it hadn't been done before, is they surveyed members of Parliament. Where do you stand on the issue of slavery? And then they publicized the results. It was a technique that was first invented by these guys 200 years ago.
Are there still lessons to be learned from what these people did 200 years ago?
I think the story of a successful social movement like this ought to provide enormous encouragement for people who are working for progressive social change of various sorts today, because we live in a world where we are faced with the problem of how do you make the empathy of people in a country like this one extend to people elsewhere? How do you make Americans care about people who are dying in Darfur? How do you make Americans care about people who are being tortured by our own troops in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere? And I think we can learn a lot from people 200 years ago who made folks in their country, Great Britain, extend their empathy to a group of people who hadn't been included in it before, the slaves.
Adam Hochschild, talking with Steve Paulson about his book, Bury the Chains.